Chapter 41, which contains the substance of a pleasant conversation between Mr. Bumble and the lady, and shows that even a beetle may be susceptible on some points. The night was bitter cold. The snow lay on the ground, frozen into a hard thick crust, so that only the heaps that had drifted into byways and corners were affected by the sharp wind that howled abroad, which, as if expending increased fury on such prey as it found, caught it savagely up in clouds, and, whirling it into a thousand misty eddies, scattered it in air. Bleak, dark, and piercing cold, it was a night for the well-housed and fed to draw round the bright fire and thank God they were at home, and for the homeless, starving wretch to lay him down and die. Many hunger-worn outcasts close their eyes in our bare streets, at such times, who, let their crimes have been what they may, can hardly open them in a more bitter world. Such was the aspect of out-of-doors affairs, when Mr. Corney, the matron of the workhouse to which our readers have been already introduced as the birthplace of Oliver Twist, sat herself down before a cheerful fire in her own little room, and glanced, with no small degree of complacency, at a small round table, on which stood a tray of corresponding size, furnished with all necessary materials for the most grateful meal that matrons enjoy. In fact, Mrs. Corney was about to solace herself with a cup of tea, as she glanced from the table to the fireplace, where the smallest of all possible kettles was singing a small song in a small voice, her inward satisfaction evidently increased, so much so, indeed, that Mrs. Corney smiled. "Well," said the matron, leaning her elbow on the table, and looking reflectively at the fire, "I'm sure we have all on us a great deal to be grateful for. A great deal, if we did but know it." Mrs. Corney shook her head mournfully, as if deploring the mental blindness of those paupers who did not know it, and thrusting a silver spoon, private property, into the inmost recesses of a 2-ounce tin tea caddy, proceeded to make the tea. How slight a thing will disturb the equanimity of our frail minds. The black teapot, being very small and easily filled, ran over while Mrs. Corney was moralizing, and the water slightly scalded Mrs. Corney's hand. "Drat the pot," said the worthy matron, setting it down very hastily on the hob, "a little stupid thing, that only holds a couple of cups. What use is it of, to anybody? Except," said Mrs. Corney, pausing, "except to a poor desolate creature like me. Oh dear!" With these words, the matron dropped into her chair, and, once more resting her elbow on the table, thought of her solitary fate. The small teapot, and the single cup, had awakened in her mind sad recollections of Mr. Corney, who had not been dead more than 25 years, and she was overpowered. "I shall never get another," said Mrs. Corney, pettishly. "I shall never get another like him." Whether this remark bore reference to the husband, or the teapot, is uncertain. It might have been the latter, for Mrs. Corney looked at it as she spoke, and took it up afterwards. She had just tasted her first cup, when she was disturbed by a soft tap at the room door. "Oh, come in with you," said Mrs. Corney, sharply. "Some of the old women dying, I suppose. They always die when I'm at meals. Don't stand there, letting the cold air in, don't. What's amiss now, eh?"
"Nothing, ma'am, nothing," replied a man's voice.
"Dear me," exclaimed the matron, in a much sweeter tone, "is that Mr. Bumble?"
"At your service, ma'am," said Mr. Bumble, who had been stopping outside, to rub his shoes clean, and to shake the snow off his coat, and who now made his appearance, bearing the cocked hat in one hand, and a bundle in the other. "Shall I shut the door, ma'am?" The lady modestly hesitated to reply, lest there should be any impropriety in holding an interview with Mr. Bumble, with closed doors. Mr. Bumble, taking advantage of the hesitation, and being very cold himself, shut it without permission.
Hard weather, Mr. Bumble, apostrophe said the matron.
Hard, indeed, ma'am, apostrophe replied the beetle.
Anti-parochial weather this, ma'am. We have given away, Mrs. Corny, we have given away a matter of 20 quartern loaves, and a cheese and a half, this very blessed afternoon, and yet them paupers are not contented.
Apostrophe, of course not. When would they be, Mr. Bumble?
Apostrophe said the matron, sipping her tea.
When, indeed, ma'am?
Apostrophe rejoined Mr. Bumble.
Why, here's one man that, inconsiderate of his wife and large family, has a quartern loaf and a good pound of cheese, full weight.
Is he grateful, ma'am?
Is he grateful?
Not a copper farthing's worth of it.
What does he do, ma'am, but ask for a few coals? If it's only a pocket handkerchief full, he says.
Coals. What would he do with coals?
Toast his cheese with them, and then come back for more.
That's the way with these people, ma'am. Give them a apron full of coals today, and they'll come back for another, the day after tomorrow, as brazen as alabaster.
Apostrophe, the matron expressed her entire concurrence in this intelligible simile, and the beetle went on.
I never, apostrophe said Mr. Bumble, see anything like the pitch it's got to.
The day afore yesterday, a man knew of been a married woman, ma'am, and I may mention it to you, a man, with hardly a rag upon his back, here Mrs. Corny looked at the floor, goes to our overseer's door, when he has got company coming to dinner, and says, he must be relieved, Mrs. Corny. As he wouldn't go away, and shocked the company very much, our overseer sent him out a pound of potatoes, and half a pint of oatmeal.
My heart, says the ungrateful villain, what's the use of this to me?
You might as well give me a pair of iron spectacles.
Apostrophe, very good, says our overseer, taking him away again, you won't get anything else here.
Then I'll die in the streets,
says the vagrant.
Oh no, you won't, says our overseer.
Apostrophe, ha, ha.
That was very good.
So like Mr. Granite, wasn't it?
Apostrophe interposed the matron.
Well, Mr. Bumble?
Apostrophe, well, ma'am, apostrophe rejoined the beetle, he went away, and he did die in the streets.
There's a obstinate pauper for you.
Apostrophe, it beats anything I could have believed, apostrophe observed the matron emphatically.
But don't you think out-of-door relief a very bad thing, anyway, Mr. Bumble?
You're a gentleman of experience, and ought to know.
Come.
Apostrophe, Mrs. Corny, apostrophe said the beetle, smiling as men smile who are conscious of superior information, out-of-door relief, properly managed, ma'am. Is the parochial safeguard.
The great principle of out-of-door relief is to give the paupers exactly what they don't want, and then they get tired of coming.
Apostrophe, dear me.
Apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Corny.
Well, that is a good one too.
Apostrophe, yes.
Betwixt you and me, ma'am, apostrophe returned Mr. Bumble, that's the great principle. And that's the reason why, if you look at any cases that get into the mendacious newspapers, you'll always observe that sick families have been relieved with slices of cheese.
That's the rule now, Mrs. Corny, all over the country.
But, however, apostrophe said the beetle, stopping to unpack his bundle, these are official secrets, ma'am, not to be spoken of. Except, as I may say, among the parochial officers, such as ourselves.
This is the port wine, ma'am, that the board ordered for the infirmary.
Real, fresh, genuine port wine. Only out of the cask this forenoon. Clear as a bell, and no sediment.
Apostrophe, having held the first bottle up to the light, and shaken it well to test its excellence, Mr. Bumble placed them both on top of a chest of drawers, folded the handkerchief in which they had been wrapped, put it carefully in his pocket, and took up his hat, as if to go.
You'll have a very cold walk, Mr. Bumble, apostrophe said the matron.
It blows, ma'am, apostrophe replied Mr. Bumble, turning up his coat collar, enough to cut one's ears off.
apostrophe, the matron looked, from the little kettle, to the beetle, who was moving towards the door, and as the beetle coughed, preparatory to bidding her good night, bashfully inquired whether he wouldn't take a cup of tea? Mr. Bumble instantaneously turned back his collar again, laid his hat and stick upon a chair, and drew another chair up to the table. As he slowly seated himself, he looked at the lady. She fixed her eyes upon the little teapot. Mr. Bumble coughed again, and slightly smiled. Mrs. Corney rose to get another cup and saucer from the closet. As she sat down, her eyes once again encountered those of the gallant beetle. She colored, and applied herself to the task of making his tea. Again Mr. Bumble coughed louder this time than he had coughed yet. Sweet? Mr. Bumble? Apostrophe inquired the matron, taking up the sugar basin. Very sweet, indeed, ma'am, apostrophe replied Mr. Bumble. He fixed his eyes on Mrs. Corney as he said this, and if ever a beetle looked tender, Mr. Bumble was that beetle at that moment. The tea was made, and handed in silence. Mr. Bumble, having spread a handkerchief over his knees to prevent the crumbs from sullying the splendor of his shorts, began to eat and drink, varying these amusements, occasionally, by fetching a deep sigh, which, however, had no injurious effect upon his appetite, but, on the contrary, rather seemed to facilitate his operations in the tea and toast department. You have a cat, ma'am, I see, apostrophe said Mr. Bumble, glancing at one who, in the center of her family, was basking before the fire, and kittens too, I declare. Apostrophe, I am so fond of them, Mr. Bumble, you can't think, replied the matron. They're so happy, so frolicsome, and so cheerful, that they are quite companions for me. Apostrophe, very nice animals, ma'am, apostrophe replied Mr. Bumble, approvingly, so very domestic. Apostrophe, oh, yes. Apostrophe rejoined the matron with enthusiasm, so fond of their home too, that it's quite a pleasure, I'm sure. Apostrophe Mrs. Corney, ma'am, said Mr. Bumble, slowly, and marking the time with his teaspoon, I mean to say this, ma'am. That any cat, or kitten, that could live with you, ma'am, and not be fond of its home, must be a ass, ma'am. Apostrophe, oh, Mr. Bumble. Apostrophe remonstrated Mrs. Corney. It's of no use disguising facts, ma'am, apostrophe said Mr. Bumble, slowly flourishing the teaspoon with a kind of amorous dignity which made him doubly impressive. I would drown it myself, with pleasure. Apostrophe, then you're a cruel man, apostrophe said the matron vivaciously, as she held out her hand for the beetle's cup, and a very hard-hearted man besides. Apostrophe, hard-hearted, ma'am? Apostrophe said Mr. Bumble. Hard? Apostrophe Mr. Bumble resigned his cup without another word, squeezed Mrs. Corney's little finger as she took it, and inflicting two open-handed slaps upon his laced waistcoat, gave a mighty sigh, and hitched his chair a very little morsel farther from the fire. It was a round table, and as Mrs. Corney and Mr. Bumble had been sitting opposite each other, with no great space between them, and fronting the fire, it will be seen that Mr. Bumble, in receding from the fire, and still keeping at the table, increased the distance between himself and Mrs. Corney. Which proceeding, some prudent readers will doubtless be disposed to admire, and to consider an act of great heroism on Mr. Bumble's part. He being in some sort tempted by time, place, and opportunity, to give utterance to certain soft nothings, which however well they may become the lips of the light and thoughtless, do seem immeasurably beneath the dignity of judges of the land, members of Parliament, ministers of state, lord mayors, and other great public functionaries, but more particularly beneath the stateliness and gravity of a beetle, who, as is well known, should be the sternest and most inflexible among them all. Whatever were Mr. Bumble's intentions, however, and no doubt they were of the best, it unfortunately happened, as has been twice before remarked, that the table was a round one, Consequently, Mr. Bumble, moving his chair by little and little, soon began to diminish the distance between himself and the matron, and, continuing to travel round the outer edge of the circle, brought his chair, in time, close to that in which the matron was seated. Indeed, the two chairs touched, and when they did so, Mr. Bumble stopped. Now, if the matron had moved her chair to the right, she would have been scorched by the fire, and if to the left, she must have fallen into Mr. Bumble's arms. So, being a discreet matron, and no doubt foreseeing these consequences at a glance, she remained where she was, and handed Mr. Bumble another cup of tea. Hard-hearted, Mrs. Corney? said Mr. Bumble, stirring his tea, and looking up into the matron's face. Are you hard-hearted, Mrs. Corney? Dear me. Exclaimed the matron, what a very curious question from a single man. What can you want to know for, Mr. Bumble? The beetle drank his tea to the last drop, finished a piece of toast, whisked the crumbs off his knees, wiped his lips, and deliberately kissed the matron. Mr. Bumble. Cried that discreet lady in a whisper, for the fright was so great that she had quite lost her voice. Mr. Bumble, I shall scream. Mr. Bumble made no reply, but in a slow and dignified manner, put his arm round the matron's waist. As the lady had stated her intention of screaming, of course she would have screamed at this additional boldness, but that the exertion was rendered unnecessary by a hasty knocking at the door, which was no sooner heard than Mr. Bumble darted, with much agility, to the wine bottles, and began dusting them with great violence, while the matron sharply demanded who was there. It is worthy of remark, as a curious physical instance of the efficacy of a sudden surprise in counteracting the effects of extreme fear, that her voice had quite recovered all its official asperity. If you please, mistress, said a withered old female pauper, hideously ugly, putting her head in at the door, old Sally is. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.